Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Tuesday, about midday. Joining me from Austin, Texas is the professor, the author of Sprawl Ball, Kurt Goldsberry.
What's up, Brian? How are you?
And if you're watching on our YouTube channel, you can see a spectacular Tiffany basketball over Kirk's shoulder.
It's, oh, wow.
I'm kind of jealous of that. Yeah. I know that they had those last year, but I kind of like it.
I went as part of a feature I did last year on the new trophies the NBA rolled out for the Larry O'Brien and for the MVP stuff. They gave me this beautiful teal basketball, classic signature teal color that Tiffany has on a lot of their packaging. But yes, thank you for the call out on that.
Yeah, Tiffany probably has like a patent on that. Joining us from Oakland, California is Anscape's Mark Spears. What's up, Mark?
Got a couple balls back here by myself.
Yeah, you do.
I actually got a ball rack.
You do?
So, yeah. There's one basketball in particular that has an amazing story, but I don't know that I could tell it.
All right, that'll be for after dark.
Yeah.
The last year they did a whole new
thing. Oh, by the way, since he's throwing up his horns, you know.
Yeah. Got Tigers. They got a big game this week, Spears.
UAB?
I thought you were playing Georgia. Or is that?
Oh, that's no. I got my ticket. That's December 3rd, Hoss.
Oh, December 3rd. Okay.
There goes your chance to be guest picker, Brian. There goes your chance.
Yeah, I'm not looking for that.
Showed up for the Alabama Birmingham game. Yeah.
That's right. The SEC always plays like a bogus game the second to last week of the season. Yeah. It's a strategic thing. I remember last year, so the NBA rolled out the new trophy design. And like Tiffany did it or whatever, but then they had a new Louis Vuitton sponsorship where the case
beautiful.
And I remember asking people what they thought the actual retail value of that trophy case was. I think Spears, I think it was on set.
Yeah, in Cleveland.
The case.
Yeah. It's huge.
No. It was in when we were in.
I'm sorry, Boston. Why did I say Cleveland?
Yeah, it was on Boston. Set with us for NBA Today, and so like, we had the case up close
in Boston,
and I was examining it, and I remember asking Malika. I go, Malika, what do you think this cost? And I don't remember what she said, but it was way low. She's like, oh, probably like $5,000, and I like cackled out loud. I was like, this is $50,000 if it's a cent. But we had a spirited debate about.
On how eBay, it'd be more than that, right?
Probably. Anyway, we digress. So the Boston Celtics are off to a terrific start. They are 10 or 11 and 3. They have the longest winning streak going as we record this podcast. And they're doing it despite, obviously, the drama at their coaching position and the fact that Robert Williams, who is just such an important player to them, has missed the entire season at this point after knee surgery. When you watch them play like nightly, it's just like a show between Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And they have the number one offense in the league to this point, and it's not close. They average three more points per 100 possessions than the number two Denver Nuggets, and the Cavs are number three right behind that. The Nuggets are as close to the Celtics between one and two as the Nuggets are to the 15th Brooklyn Nets. So not only are they the best offensive team, they're the best offensive team running away. And they are just so dynamic with the way that they're playing. Malcolm Brogdon coming in has made a positive addition. So Kirk, I want to start with you. We haven't talked that much about the Celtics because there's been some drama elsewhere in the league and particularly the Eastern Conference this year with teams that have been underperforming, the Nets, the 76ers, even the Heat have gotten a little bit more attention, although the Heat just crawled to 500 for the first time Monday night when they squeaked one out against the Suns. Jimmy Butler with a clutch block on Devin Booker at the end of that game. The Celtics have kind of in a way, flown below the radar, other than like updates on how dominant Tatum has been. By the way, they're 11-3, two of the losses to the Cats. So they're 11-1 against everybody else. What have the Celtics shown you so far?
Offense, offense, offense. That's the story. I mean, this team was good on offense, especially at the end of last year, but I don't think anybody, Brian, would have predicted the Celtics would have number one defense in the NBA this season. Nobody would have said that, I don't think. So credit to the coaches and credit to two players in particular. You already mentioned them, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are playing the best basketball we've ever seen them play together. I think as a duo, you can count on them for 56, 57 points a game. That's ridiculous. I mean, that's historical sort of proficiency from a duo in pro basketball. And so I think you have to start there as a team. They're one of the best shooting teams in the NBA. As you mentioned, they're 11-3. And if you want to pick nits, you go to the defense,
right?
But only to an extent, because this team is 21st in defense right now. As you already mentioned, Robert Williams III is by far their most important defensive piece. He's not out there. So we're going to talk today about a few concerning defenses. This isn't one of them. I expect this team to snap back into shape. I also expect their offensive efficiency to drop a little bit. But I also think that that defensive number is going to creep up too. So, you know, they're forcing really good shots on defense, and the opponents are just making them at high rates, that shooting luck stuff. So I'm not worried about them. And I think they've flown under the radar. They're defending Eastern Conference champs. And as you mentioned, they're 11-3. I think they're going to – the ceiling is still the same for this team, the NBA championship. And I don't think anything's changed since. And they've had, obviously, a lot of drama, as you pointed out. So a great start for the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, Spears. I don't know what you thought they were going to be.
Yeah.
But Joe Mazzulla, I don't know if this was the plan, but Joe Mazzulla has them running as much as possible. They're really, you know, Mazzulla has just almost enhanced them from where they were last year.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was kind of, when they made the decision to make Mazzulla coach, which is, you know, respect to him. This isn't shade on him, but I was like, I really hope that Damon Stoudemire was going to get that opportunity. Somebody who has been a head coach, actually, you know, on the college level. But I got to give Mazzulla credit, man. Like, he definitely, you know, the NBA awards come out at the end of November for October, November. He should be the coach of the months, I guess you could say, for the Eastern Conference. They look like a team that, with everything going on, I just really thought they were going to have a bad start. I really did. I thought this could affect them. And it was like, once the season started, okay, let's take that cloud, throw it over there. Yeah, we're still upset about this. And they've been balling, man. And, you know, I talked to Jason Tatum before the season, and I could sense that, you know, losing in the finals really motivated him. Like, we got a taste of it. We didn't win it. Now we know how to get there. We got to get back. Same with Jaylen. Same with Smart. And I sense that they're playing with this fire, this chip. Getting Malcolm Brogdon, I think, was brilliant. That's what they've been missing. But Marcus has also been playing great defensively. Like Kirk, man, like not having Robert Williams and doing this defensively is pretty shocking to me. But look, man, we got to remember where they were, right? They were in the finals last year for a reason. And we've been probably talking so much about MB's heroics, which we should be doing, and what Giannis and the Bucks have been doing. And they just quietly, man, being the Eastern Conference champs that they are.
So their three-point shooting has been absolutely devastating. They're fourth in the league in percentage, but it's not just their accuracy. It's just their depth of three-point shooting. So let me tell you about what some of their role players are shooting from three-point range. So Al Horford is shooting 45% on five attempts a game. Yeah. Grant Williams, who was a killer, he buried the Boston Celtics or the Milwaukee Bucks with his three-point shooting in that conference semifinal series last year. He's making 49%, shooting three a game, but still almost 50%. Derek White shooting four a game, 40%. Sam Hauser, who was a guy that Bontemps was talking about in the preseason as a guy they were going to rely on a lot this year after Danilo Gallinari went down for the whole year, that opened the door for Sam Hauser. He is shooting 45% from long range on 4.5 a game. He is a certified weapon. He basically is kind of like Duncan Robinson. He pretty much only shoots threes, and but he's efficient at it. And there, you know, he doesn't do it every game, but he does it enough to make a difference. And you know, Brogdon is, you know, okay, 37%. Tatum shooting 37%. Jaylen Brown a little bit less than you'd like at 34%. But Tatum shooting 10 a game. And so shooting 10 a game at 37%, do the math, that's over 50% in efficient shooting. So, you know, Tatum is also getting to the line. I mentioned this earlier this week. We were talking about all the guys averaging over 30. He's averaging 32. He's getting the line 9 times a game and shooting 87%. That's another thing about the Celtics. They're devastatingly accurate free throw shooters, which is why, I mean, again, let me just go over the percentages here. Jason Tatum, 9 times to the free throw line a game, 87%. Jaylen Brown, 83%. Marcus Smart, 83%. Grant Williams, 82%. Wow. Derek White, 88%. Malcolm Brogdon, 86%. I remember when I was a kid, like following the 86, 87, 88 Celtics, they were like the best free throw shooting team like of all time. Like they never missed free throws. This is like one of the best free throw shooting teams of all time that you're looking at here.
Who's the worst on their team?
Maybe Al.
Of their core players, Al Horford shoots 63%, but he shoots, you know, less than one a game. He's pretty much a jump shooter at this point in his career. So, like, even, you know, Luke Cornett, who's like this really long, rangy guy that comes off the bench, you know, is playing minutes now because Robert Williams is out. He doesn't get the line that much, but he shoots 88% from it. And he was the guy who kind of, you know, became a little bit of a meme when he was standing on a guy took a 3-pointer from the corner. This is about 2-3 weeks ago. I don't remember who they were playing. Did you see this, Kirk? Somebody got an open 3-pointer from the corner and he stood on the block, you know, 15, 18 feet away from him and just jumped in the air with his hands up.
Yeah.
Trying to like block the rim.
You know, George Mikan style. That used to be legal, but not anymore.
They actually are third in the league in free throw percentage. But if you behind the Heat and the Bulls, but if you want to just look at the depth of their team, offensively, the depth of guys who can hit 3-point shots, the depth of guys who hit their free throws, which means, you know, there's just efficiency squared basically. It's really the depth of that that's so impressive. You know, the Bulls are carried up there by DeRozan, who gets the line so much that you have such a high percentage. So,
and yeah, Brian, if you frame it another way, this team is just built for modern basketball in the 2020s. The other way to look at it is like there's an absence of people who can't shoot the ball, which we've seen in other places in the league. This team's historic rival, for instance, they don't have those guys who have the anti-gravity, you know,
they're the anti-Lakers.
They have been the anti-Lakers for generations and it continues. But in this year, in this decade, it might be like credit to Brad Stevens. I hadn't thought about that in that context. He said that this team is loaded with guys who can space the floor and knock down shots and take advantage of anybody who dares cheat on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, two of the best scoring wings in the league. So, you know, what Brad has been able to do is surround his incredible duo with elite shooting role players. That's exactly what the Lakers have failed to do. I think that's pretty poetic.
When you watch them play, they don't actually rank that high in terms of their pace, how fast they play. But what definitely happens is whenever Tatum or Brown or Smart see an opportunity to run, they run. And it's just, they're hard to deal with in the half court set anyway. And they, you know, they kind of remind me a little bit of the 2010s Miami Heat in this way, where the Heat were a much more aggressive defensive team and they looked to generate turnovers and then they would run off them. And then LeBron and Wade would go flying up the court and they had this ability to like go on a 12-0 run in like 35 seconds of game time because they would just create such high intensity fast breaks. That's kind of what Tatum and Brown do when they have the option. If there's a long rebound or there's a turnover, they really, really look to get out and run. But they also are effective in the half court. The question, I think, Spears, because they're so reliant on Robert Williams defensively, and because they're you know,
when is he projected back?
Well, he was returned to basketball activities in 8 to 12 weeks. So right there, that's already, you know, he had the surgery at the end of September, September 20th. So they said 8 to 12 weeks to return to basketball activities. That's a big spread, obviously.
Yeah. Like a month January, spread. Right.
And so that's just return to basketball activities. That doesn't mean he's going to just spring back out on the court. Of course. Yeah. So I would say we are a ways away from it. So the question is, does this team need to go out and try to get another big man who can defend? The name that has come up in, as people have speculated, has been Jakob Poeltl from the Spurs. They did a deal with the Spurs last year, obviously, for Derek White. Now, the Spurs may want to keep Jakob Poeltl. I'm not saying that they're going to put him out there. But the Spurs were unable to extend Poeltl. They tried to extend him before the season. And so he will become an unrestricted free agent. And, you know, they have the lowest payroll in the league. San Antonio can certainly afford to pay him. And maybe that's what they're going to do at the end of the season.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Okay. We have actually kind of a sneaky big game on Wednesday night. It's not on ESPN. I had hoped that it would be. This sounds like a good game for ESPN, but the Cavs are playing in Milwaukee. Now, the Cavs have lost four in a row, which takes a little bit of potential heat off of this one. But Kirk, you had a story come out about the Cavs this week, and it was very, very bullish on them. And not just because you like Donovan Mitchell's 3-point shooting percentage. So this is a game that, you know, could end up being a playoff matchup, not necessarily in the conference finals, but it could end up being a significant playoff matchup. What are some of the things about the Cavs? Now, they're 8-5, but they have a lot going for them. What are some of the things about them that you've liked so far?
Well, it goes back to last year, Brian. I loved them last year. They started putting up some great defensive numbers before the All-Star break. I think they ranked fourth in the NBA. Jared Allen really emerged and made an All-Star game. I loved that. I always think that's the foundation, especially in a small market, for success is a really strong defense. And credit to J.B. Bickerstaff and the front office for building a team that could do that. This year, I was very bullish on them coming in before the Mitchell acquisition, then, of course, after it. Last time I was on this podcast, we actually referenced that. They were my favorite team to sort of overperform their Vegas expectation this season. And it looked like a really smart play. They won, I think, 8 of their first 9 games and had the best net rating in the NBA. I think they still do as of recording time here today. But the last week or so, Brian, this team has fallen on hard times, gone out west, collapsed against a Clippers team that's one of the worst offenses in the NBA, lost in Sacramento, lost in the Warriors, then came home licking their wounds and lost to one of the coldest teams in the NBA, Minnesota. Now they're 8-5. And in the context of these other two teams we've talked about in the East, Milwaukee and Boston, they've both proven that they can win games without big pieces out on the floor. Boston is 11-3 without Time Lord. Milwaukee has a great record without Chris Middleton. One of the things I took away from this cold stretch is Cleveland has a hard time winning without their guys out there. They rested Donovan in that Minnesota game, Jared Allen, and they lost, and their defense fell apart. I am still bullish on them because the numbers are just too good when everybody's healthy. If this team stays healthy, they're one of the best, most complete teams in the NBA. And we can get into some of the stats, but that's the big answer to your question. The stats from the early part of this season don't just scream, this is a good team. It screams contender. We're ready to crash that party with Milwaukee and Boston. They've already beaten Boston in 2 statement wins this season. And Donovan has provided them with a spark on offense. They were number 20 in the league in offensive efficiency last year. They're number 3 or 4 this year. That has a lot to do with Donovan and this pick and roll situation they have with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. It's a future. It's a perfect team for modern basketball. I love them on both ends of the court. They just got to stay healthy, in my opinion.
Spears, you saw them last week when they were out west taking it on the chin in the Bay Area, but they obviously had like a 10-point lead on the Warriors floor, and then blew it in the fourth quarter. They had a kind of a frustrating road trip, but as Kirk said, like the numbers on the dashboard are all green. Their offense is 3rd, their defense is 4th, their net rating is 1st. You know, if you know, the dipstick says that they're going to have a lot of wins this year.
Yeah, no, and obviously their backcourt is sensational. You know, Donovan Mitchell, I had a chance to visit with him, but one thing that stuck out was not so much what he told me, it's what everybody in the Cavs were telling me. And I had about 4 people say, we didn't know he was this good. We didn't know that he was this athletic. We didn't know that he was this great of a scorer. I was like, well, I don't know what you guys been watching, but but they have been really impressed with him on and off the court. He just got there and he's fit in seamless. He's a huge, huge star in Cleveland already. I don't know what his jersey sales are, but his ability to come in, he's averaging 31. And just kind of be seamless. And, you know, I asked him about, you know, how he found out that he was going to Cleveland. And he just said that you've heard this, that he thought he was going to New York. And then suddenly his agent called and said, hey, you're going to Cleveland. And he was kind of like, had a loss for words. And he said his next reaction was, well, who's coming and who's going? His agent said, let me call you right back. Called him back 2 minutes later. And he's like, all right, we can win with this. So he's been all in since he found out what the trade is. They seem all in back. So I've been really just impressed on how he's kind of just come in seamlessly and fit in. And probably he is the most exciting electric player they've had since, you know, Kyrie and LeBron walked out the door.
So one of the things that the scouts have told me about the Cavs, and this is, it's important to frame this. This is opposing scouts coming in. This isn't like somebody on the Cavs staff talking about how close the team is. These are guys who come in and look for flaws. Okay. One of the things that the scouts have told me is that they have noticed is how close the team is. And look, let's just be honest. Donovan Mitchell last year was on a team that had chemistry problems, period. I don't want to go back and rehash it, but the team wasn't close and to the point where they blew it up. And so, yeah, they knew they were trading for a guy who was awesome. Maybe he didn't shoot the three-pointer like this. You know, he's shooting over 40%. I think that's what surprised them. But, you know, they were a little, they had some mystery about how he would fit in. Well, he has fit in great. And their team is very, very close. Now, being close in November doesn't matter if you're not still close in March. It doesn't matter if it's just a one and done thing where you have an issue next year. But their team is genuinely close knit. And you see it, they do after wins, which hasn't happened in a week and a half. They give away this this chain. They call it the junkyard dog chain. You know, and it's a trope that's been around in sports and various things for decades, but they really, really get into it. And yeah. So that's an expression of their chemistry.
One quick thing to that too is you know how it is, Brian, when you go into the locker room or you walk in to shoot around, like you kind of really get to see how close these guys are, or whether they're not close at all. And when I walked into their shoot around San Francisco the other day, there was like five or six players crowding around Donovan, chiding him about something. Like having like laughing about something. Now, like I wasn't in on the joke.
Yeah.
I don't know what was going on, but he was like really like taking it in jest and jabbing back. And I was like, oh, okay. Like they like love this dude already. Like you could tell, like it wasn't like, you know, Ronaldo just walked into the clubhouse, right?
Soccer reference.
Yeah, like it's a month in, and these guys are already chiding him and messing with him. I'm like, okay,
yeah,
they're good.
So let me mention two more things before I move on. One is that Kevin Love is having another great season as a sixth man. Kirk, I think you had some stats on how effective he's been.
Yeah, I mean, he is, I call him the professor of ricochet studies. He is now like this sage rebounding guy who's putting up incredible rebounding numbers against second units who don't realize like one of the generational rebounding talents is now coming off the bench. We haven't seen that in a while. It's really fun to watch. But he's also probably the best mentor on the glass for people like Jared Allen, who is a top rebounder in the starting unit, and Evan Mobley. And that trio is incredible, Brian. And I think in the era of, you know, highly skilled three-point shooting, rebounding gets lost as this unglamorous blue-collar thing, but it's the thing the Cavs are the best at. They get stops in large part because missed shots get collected by those three guys. So opponents aren't getting second chances, and Cleveland is getting better offensive chances that start with these defensive rebounds. And one of the cool things is, I think Kevin Love is in this new phase of his career, and he's getting to mentor these two great young bigs who are perfectly suited for the modern NBA. The other thing I'll say is I feel like as a pick and roll artisan, Donovan Mitchell landed in heaven because he has these two modern bigs. In my piece, I described it as like having both Justin Jefferson, shout out Spears, and Cooper Kupp on the same team for these long lob targets. What a dream come true for a point guard like Darius Garland or Donovan Mitchell. So I think this team is built for success on both ends of the court.
So Love is averaging 12 and 8 in 20 minutes off the bench. He's 34. I'm wondering if the Cavs should extend him.
Yeah.
Not
shooting
like a multi-year.
Shooting 41% from three too. So spacing out the court when he's out there on offense
like,
as well.
This is just one of those things over and over and over. You are reminded in the NBA, if you've listened to this podcast, you've heard me say it, so prepare yourself for it again. Games are long. Seasons are long. Playoff series are long. Careers, in a lot of cases, are long. Kevin Love was an albatross contract a couple of years ago. They literally tried to trade him for years. And now I am saying that maybe they should consider extending this guy. Now, he's going to take a pay cut. He's not getting – I think he's making $27 million this year. He's not – you know, I mean, he'd have to come down a little bit, but I think they should consider it. I don't know if Kevin, I mean, Kevin would have the chance to go anywhere he wants next year, but like, he's doing really well. They're doing really well. He's a real valuable piece. You know, he finished second to Tyler Hero. Now, Tyler Hero was a pretty much a runaway winner in the sixth man last year. Kevin Love finished second, though, in the sixth man voting. So he was seventh man last year. And he right now would be considered a candidate for sixth man right now. I know we're in month of the season, but
hey, Brian, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Should, when this is all said and done, should the Cavs retire Kevin Love's jersey?
Yes. And I'm going to tell you why. It's a really good question. The standard for the jersey retirements for the Cavs, with all due respect, it's not the Celtics. You know, and like, so recently they retired Zdrunas Ilgauskas's jersey. And like, on a personal level, I adore Zdrunas Ilgauskas. He is a wonderful man. I feel terrible for him because his wife recently passed away of cancer within the last couple of months. Ilgauskas had, he played there for like a decade, and he was, you know, a really good player, but you know, he's not going to be a Hall of Famer. Kevin Love has had equal impact to, you know, there's been guys who've had their jerseys retired who only played a couple of seasons with the Cavs. So, you know, based on that standard, plus I am a big believer that the Cavs should immortalize the 2016 team forever, because a market like Cleveland, they may not win another title for 30 or 40 years, if ever. And I've always respected, and it's getting a little bit different now because some of the Blazers fans now, we just weren't alive, but the Blazers championship has been immortalized forever there. That team had, you know, the spirit of 77. I think now I'm showing ignorance, but like, that team in Portland was immortalized. Like, all those guys got their numbers retired. And it's like a core foundational piece of being a Blazer fan is remembering and honoring that team. I think the Cavs should do that with the 2016 team. I think they should have an entire wing of the arena dedicated to walking down memory lane there. It was that special. I mean, I've advocated that they should rename the street that the parade went down, that comes off the highway down to the arena, LeBron James Way. Like, that should be renamed yesterday. But okay, he's still playing in the league. You know, maybe that's not couth. And I, there's a plaza in between.
What's it called now?
East 9th Street.
Yeah, they could change it now.
Yeah, that should be LeBron James Way. And there's a plaza in between the baseball stadium and the arena, and that's where the LeBron James statue should go. And that should be renamed the LeBron James Plaza, like 5 minutes after he retires. The statue should already be in progress. So in my opinion, hell yes, you retire, you know, Kevin Love's jersey. You know,
or you,
I know,
could
that,
call that plaza Love Plaza.
Oh, that's nice. Well, yeah, that's a nice name. That's a nice ring to it.
I'm not so sure he should get a plaza named after him, but he should have that jersey up there, because, you know, he has been, he's now been a Cav for 8 years.
Yeah.
You know,
and he could have asked out.
Yeah, he re-signed there after LeBron left. Now, granted, he did it because it was a lot of money, but like, he stuck with him, and he stuck with him here. So the other thing I want to bring up before we move on, Evan Mobley, he hasn't taken a step forward offensively like I and other people had hoped. Now, they are number three in the league in offense, so I'm not sitting here saying, boy, they need more offense.
Well, he's had an injury problem, right, too, that he's still getting over?
He's had an ankle, but it hasn't, I don't think, been debilitating.
Yeah.
I still
hear that he's still not quite past that yet.
I think that is true. But, you know, they lost the game to the Clippers, the first loss. They blew a fourth quarter lead. They lost the game to the Warriors, blew a fourth quarter lead. They had problems executing under pressure in fourth quarters, and that's partially because Mitchell and Garland, while they're very dynamic, they don't have great size. They have at times trouble creating their own shot. And when teams can set their defense, it can sometimes get hard. They really need Mobley to become, and he's got all the tools. So Mobley hasn't had a great year so far. He is defending well. His shooting percentage is high, 55%. But his outside shot has sort of regressed a little bit, and he hasn't been able to influence games late in games like he did a little bit last year. So that's something to bear watching, but it is early.
Yeah. One more thing on that, on him is this team is one of the only two teams in the league with two guys in the top 10 of the dunks category. He's a great interior finisher. I think it's just going to take time with his ankle, and then with the chemistry with his new backcourt partner, his common pick and roll partner. But another thing with him is, like, this team is stacked. You add Donovan Mitchell into the starting lineup, there's fewer of those offensive markers we would expect to see increase in year two. Suddenly, you know, finding a shot when you're playing off the ball in Cleveland is a little bit harder than it was last year. So I'm not worried about that, Brian. And one other thing, it's basketball's pretty simple. They might have four all-stars on that team in their starting five. In the next few years. That's how good they are. Three of them have already made it before their primes. Evan, as I wrote in the piece, has the highest ceiling. I think they need a little bit of time. I think that's what this losing streak really means.
Hey, Kirk.
Yeah.
How does Rubio affect them?
It's a great question. The other big number, Spears, that I see that bothers me early with this team is they're playing Donovan Mitchell way too much. I don't think he's ever played more than 35 minutes a game. And they're creeping him up near 40. He's already had an ankle issue. I think Rubio comes in and number one just gives Donovan some time off. But that's the depth thing that the other contenders that we mentioned that they have. They can win games without big pieces. So I think Rubio is a huge, huge thing. Brian, when do we expect Ricky Rubio to return into this lineup?
They haven't given a timeline yet. I can just tell you that they thought his progression was pretty good, and there's been whispers about maybe sometime in December, although even me saying those words, I don't want to be held to that. But sooner rather than later, it's not going to be like, I don't think, like back part of the season. I think they'll get him before the All-Star break. And if nothing else, he'll bridge the gap between when they can stagger those two guys and take some pressure off of them. He was great for them last year. And while you're talking about a guy coming back from an ACL, you know, they re-signed him knowing he was going to be out, but they re-signed him to a multi-year deal because they thought how valuable he was going to be. Do people see your kitchen and say, wow? If not, then you need to visit cabinetstogo.com to request their free custom 3D design and quote for a kitchen makeover that wows. For a whole lot less than you'd think. The kitchen is the heart of the home. And according to the real estate experts, upgrades to the kitchen are one of the best ways to add value and joy to your home. As seen on HGTV's Dream Home, CabinetsToGo.com is your one-stop renovation destination. They have everything you need from design to installation. And with 200,000 cabinets available and ready to ship, your wow kitchen can be complete in weeks, not months. There's nothing like seeing a before and after photo when someone has gone to cabinetstogo.com. So visit cabinetstogo.com today and see why nobody beats their prices or their transferable limited lifetime warranty. Right now, get a full custom 3D design of your new kitchen at cabinetstogo.com/hoop. That's a free custom 3D design of your new wow kitchen at cabinetstogo.com/hoop. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Okay, so another game on Wednesday night that is actually on ESPN is two teams that the last two Western Conference champs that are neither one of them are thrilled with things at the moment. Suns Warriors. The Warriors lost to the Kings Sunday night, and they are 0-7 on the road. And they are continuing to have defensive problems and continuing to have problems with their bench. Spears, you were at their game on Monday night, which they won, put up 130 something on the Spurs. That they've been good at home. They had a good win over the Cavs last week. We've talked about them on this pod recently. I know you're going to talk about your Kings here in a minute, but this is a good test game. You know, the Suns are without Chris Paul, without Cam Johnson right now. So they're not going to be whole, but just check it in on the Warriors when they, after another bad road loss the other day.
Yeah. And in their win on Monday, there was no Klay Thompson, and Jordan Poole look like Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole
for the first
like
time
back.
In a while.
Yeah. And had an amazing game, you know, which certainly probably brings up the question, like, should he be the starter? Should Clay come off the bench? And Kerr has shot that down quickly. Like that he doesn't want to change that. I don't know what it is about being in the starting lineup for Poole, but you know, he and Steph play well together. They're successful together. And so I do wonder if Clay at this point could be better coming off the bench, like coming in as a shooter against second unit guys. But it's like blasphemous to say around here, right? It's blasphemous to say around the Warriors organization. I think their respect for Clay is so strong that they probably worry that he probably wouldn't handle that well. I'm not speaking for them. That's just my guess. So, because it is interesting that
Clay's a very proud man.
Yeah, like
he comes off as easygoing, but that's
extremely
not the
proud.
Real.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, he took the Barkley's criticism really hard, and you know, was real proud of his way of coming back, and he should be after what he came through. So that I wonder for the Warriors if Jordan, you know, continues to do well, if Clay, who's, you know, not playing in back-to-backs, like especially if Jordan keeps doing well in these second of back-to-backs without Clay, if that gets louder, right? I wonder if that gets louder. But, you know, Jordan Poole plays well, then this team has to needs Jordan Poole to play well for them to be successful, because right now if they're just depending on Steph to save the day, that's not fair to Steph, man. That's going to wear him down. You know, it's a long season still left, so they need Jordan to be amazing like he was last night, and maybe that puts some extra pressure on Clay to, you know, pick up his game as well.
Kirk, they're like, on one hand, you're like, oh, you look at their front line, they're like, oh, they're doing great. You know, okay, they lost some road games, you know, no big deal. It's not like this team can't win on the road. I mean, I've covered them, you know, numerous times where they won titles on the road, including a few months ago. But at the same time, they're in the bottom four in defense, and their bench is bad, and we're a month into the season now. It's not nothing. And they just sent Wiseman to the G League. And what it sounds like when they announced it, it sounded like he's not going to be in the G League for one day. He's going to be in the G League for a while.
Yeah.
And how long can they sort of just assume everything's going to be okay? Or can they?
Not long. And you heard Steve Kerr allude to that the other day when he was talking about impatience, and there's a disconnect between the player development mission of their young core and the title defense that's driving the old guard. The last team that I think really pulled off this five title run is my beloved Spurs, and Spears, we saw Manu take a bench role at some point in his career, and and thrive. But also one of the key things that made those Spurs so good in 13 and 14, and Brian, you had a front row seat for those finals, is they had Kawhi Leonard. They had a second generation helping sort of deal with the aging, balding core at the center of the rotation.
How dare you say it to Manu?
The Hall of Famers. And to me, there are two major reasons the Golden State Warriors are broken right now: depth and defense. The stat of the year in Golden State, Brian, is this. When Stephen Curry is on the floor for 449 minutes so far this year, almost 10 full games, the Dubs have a net rating of 6.8. That would tie for first in the NBA at the team level. When Curry is on the bench, Spears, you know this, 228 minutes, wow, the team's net rating has been negative 15.9. That would be one of the worst marks we've ever seen by a team in NBA history. It would be by far the worst. Curry is the MVP in a weird way. If you just look at that discrepancy, it's incredible. But it screams to me that the mission of the Golden State Warriors in the 2020s is to do this graceful handoff between this aging core and this second generation, this next generation core. You just said Wiseman's going to the G League. The Kuminga minutes have been an unmitigated disaster. Poole has been really bad. Moody has been break even, not good enough. That handoff to this young generation they were trying to do on the fly this year is not going well. And the big question over the next few months in San Francisco is, are we going to start seeing Bob Myers' iPhone start working? Are we going to start seeing them sort of jump ship on some of these young guys and play for a title right now? Because the numbers to me are clear. This team couldn't beat Boston last year. This team isn't good enough to repeat as presently constructed.
And I'll say this, Kirk, I was, I've been shocked. I was one of the people that certainly was riding high with the young guys. But I also remember when I threw out there that, you know, perhaps they could move this young core for Durant, that the entire Bay Area wanted to show up at my house, you know, and beat me up. Like, why would you do that? That just makes no sense. I wonder what they think about that now, right? The thing about Wiseman that I see is confidence. It's confidence, man, because the things that he's not doing is like kind of stunning, like not catching the ball, not jumping to block shots, not missing a shot and then looking like the whole world is against him. I give the Warriors fan base this. They're very intelligent basketball fan base, right? Reminds me of Boston. And when Wiseman came into the game on Monday night, they like cheered for him when he came in, as if to say, come on, man, we're behind you, we believe in you, we have faith in you. But I think this Santa Cruz move is a good thing for him. He has to get, I don't think there's anything wrong with his game, his ability. I don't think there's anything wrong with his body anymore. I think it's an all mental thing. And if I'm Kerr, I'm like, just go down to Santa Cruz and come back when you're dominating the G League. Which should be an easy benchmark for him, but I think he's internalized the pressure of being a Warrior, of being on a championship team, or maybe winning a ring on a team that he didn't help win a ring. Because it's just this ain't what I saw when he was healthy before. Like it totally seems mental. Maybe he gets down to the Santa Cruz Boardwalk, gets on some of them rides. Eat some of that bad fried food, you know, has some clam chowder, walks along the beach and gets his mind right, because he'll have time to do that. And I still think that he could help the Warriors out. But I do think it's to the point now where maybe, you know, dare I say a Dwight Howard signing might not have been a bad deal, right? And one thing that's not being talked about, too, is you know, Iguodala's kind of taking the Haslam role. So,
right,
he's not playing. Right. I think 10 minutes of Iguodala probably helps this team right now, but that's, in essence, it's a wasted roster spot at this moment.
Oh, Spears, talk a little bit. Other people have left too. I mean, Mike Brown's gone. Gary Payton is gone. These aren't the people who everybody thinks of when they think of this dynasty. But talk a little bit about how those losses have affected that defense. You know,
yeah, because these were veteran guys too that were on there. And you know what, I didn't think that DiVincenzo's injury like really hurt this team. Like him getting hurt beginning of the season really impacted their bench, and I think that's maybe a reason why they're starting to play a little better now. Is that even though he got tossed last night, DiVincenzo is back. So yeah, I think the Warriors, you know, pundits like myself, put too much faith in these young guys that they were ready, and they're not right now.
I was going to point out that last year they started the season 18-2. Now I'm not, you know, you don't win the title in November. Okay, fine. I'm not arguing that, but it's a reminder that, you know, they looked awesome from the start last year.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they don't look awesome. Steph looks awesome, but they don't look awesome right now. Before we go, Spears, you had one of the spiciest things that's been said on this podcast in the last 6 months before the season. When you, just to be clear, did you say you thought the Kings were going to outright make the playoffs or just make the play in? Or what was your, because I want to be clear, you were very, very bullish on the Kings.
I said they're going to make the playoffs.
Right. Okay. And you're standing by that.
Standing by.
There he goes. Okay. So it's only, I'll bet, in 5 years of doing this pod, we have talked about the Kings less than 10 times. So they are 6-6. They had a bad start and they have rebounded and they just beat the Cavs and Warriors in two games at home. Just lit up the Cavs. You know, Cavs have a top five defense. They put up almost 130 on them. They have the sixth best offense to this point. And I want to say something here. This is a nuanced take, and I know that nuance gets stripped away, especially when there's aggregation, especially when, did you hear what so-and-so said? What'd he say? And then he's like, what? I've quarreled with this about Bonteps. I know that everybody in the league thought that the Kings were stupid for trading Tyrese Haliburton.
I did.
And the only thing I wanted to say was that Domantas Sabonis is not chopped liver. He is an excellent, excellent player and a two-time All-Star.
Yeah.
And Bonteps would be like, well, he's a two-time All-Star in the Eastern Conference. Okay, got it. Please send me a telegram when Tyrese Haliburton is a two-time All-Star in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
Domantas Sabonis, and now I will use PER. People say PER is weighted towards big men and they trash PER. Domantas Sabonis is one of the league leaders in PER. He is averaging 18-11 and 6 assists a game. Please provide me the list of starting big men who are averaging 18-11 and 6 assists in a game. He is averaging that 18 points on 12 shots a game because he is shooting 56% from the field. And he's always, his whole career, he's been excellent high efficiency scorer. He has been awesome for them. Not only that, as Spears, you told us a few months ago, he really likes being in Sacramento, it seems. And I know that all the attention has been focused on Paolo Banchero and Ben Mathurin and, you know, some of the higher scoring rookies. Keegan Murray has been very good, just like he was very good over the summer in the preseason. He's averaging
better.
He's averaging 13 points. His rebounds are a little low for his position, but he's shooting the ball pretty well for a rookie, shooting, you know, taking a lot more threes than I thought he would. He's taking 6 threes a game and
he's like wide open. He's knocking them down.
Yeah. I mean, like 6 threes a game as a rookie and shooting 39%. Like that's really good. I don't think Steph shot 39. I'm going to go look what Steph shot as a rookie. He might've shot 40%, but he didn't take 6 threes a game.
Monte Ellis didn't let him shoot that many threes again.
You got that right. Spears, talk to me about your Kings.
I saw it the first. Well, here's the thing with trades. You got to give up something to get something. It was a great trade for both teams. I think Halliburton's going to have a great career with the Pacers. I think Sabonis is going to have a great career Sacramento, but Sacramento desperately needed a big. And this is a passing big. This is a guy who rebounds. I became a Sabonis fan, actually, when I was in India watching the Kings play Indiana. And Sabonis was torching the Kings by himself.
Maybe Vivek did, too.
Yeah.
They traded for him a few
years later. And the first game that he played with the Kings, they won. And him and De'Aaron Fox in that pick and roll was beautiful. And after the game, Fox hugged him in the same way that Magic hugged Kareem after that first game, right? They play great together. They're a great fit. They're inside-outside duo. I think his star is rising in Sacramento, the way he's rebounding and getting assists. Like, he could have – don't – Kirk, stop me, but if he shot the ball more, he'd have Joker numbers, right? Because the way
let's not quite go that
far. I'll stop you.
Let's not quite go that far.
but to have 11 rebounds and 5-6 assists a game is pretty impressive. But Keegan Murray's been great. De'Aaron Fox has been awesome. I think Mike Brown, what he's done, this is the first time he's coached a team that didn't have LeBron or Kobe on it. It certainly comes with a lot of pressure. So I think he's been able to put his stamp on these guys and push them. And De'Aaron Fox told me he loves the way that Mike is challenging them, coaching them hard on a daily basis. And also,
De'Aaron Fox is averaging the most points per game in his career.
Yeah.
He's shooting 55%, highest of his career.
Yeah.
Shooting 83% from the line, highest of his career. Mm-hmm. 5 rebounds a game, highest of his career. He's having a career year so far.
He had the coolest buzzer beater of the year by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he's playing great. Keegan's playing great. Red Velvet was a huge addition.
Yeah, let me speak on that real quick. I hate to keep interrupting you. Yeah. Kevin Huerter is averaging 17 points a game. Okay. Shooting 51% on threes. I'm sorry. Yeah, 51% on threes on 7 a game. They got him for like a protected first round pick. Right. Like, how about that for one of, basically the Hawks had spent so much picks and money in the offseason that they needed to reduce their payroll and they needed to thin out their perimeter play a little bit. And like, they were like, okay, who wants Kevin Huerter? And they got him. It still boggles my mind that the Kings let Bogdanovich walk for nothing instead of doing a sign and trade with the Hawks. It's kind of like, I don't get it years later. It just, how they handled that was mind boggling to me. But then they've come back and did another deal and got Kevin Huerter, and Herter's been great. Now, defensively, their team isn't doing great, and he's not doing great. But, like, how can you argue with 51% on threes on 7 a game?
And their place isn't – I don't know when's the last time either one of you guys been to a Kings game, but they if they make it to the playoffs, boy, you're going to see tears. You're going to see – a parade, like they'll be so happy. And I talked to De'Aaron last week and he got emotional, like talking about how much he wants to win there, how much he wants to get this team to the franchise, to the playoffs, get people stop asking him. He's like tired of talking about the team from 2002. actually, like how much he loves, like wants to win for Vivek. And he was just telling me about how their ownership, His wife had an Achilles surgery in San Diego. She tore Achilles hooping. His wife used to hoop at Cal. She was actually a McDonald's. I think she was a McDonald's All-American and all that. But anyways,
I want to invest in their kids.
Yeah, right.
How do I buy shares in their kids?
So one of the owners called and said, hey, I got somebody that could do the surgery in San Diego. Like they sent Luke Laux to San Diego. To train Fox, not only in San Diego, but during his honeymoon, and a trainer. So he just loves how they've treated him. He wants to win for them. He wants to win for the city.
Can I interrupt you again?
Yeah.
So he's just switched to Rich Paul. as his agent.
Yeah.
And he's under contract for many years. I think he's got 3 years left this.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know.
He's not asking out because I asked. So that, I mean, I think people are nervous about that. But De'Aaron doesn't want to leave.
Okay.
He's kind of in the Dame mode. Like he wants to do something special there. Because I asked him, why haven't you asked out? And he's like, I don't want to be handed something. I want to build something here.
Okay.
Can I take can I take the official Tim Bontemps wet blanket out of
everybody takes it with, when I talk about Sabonis. So go ahead, join them
and throw it on to the Sacramento Love Fest. You know, Mike Brown is one of my favorite coaches, especially as a defensive coach in the league. I know both you guys know him pretty well. If there's one number that's keeping him up at night right now, it's that defensive number in Sacramento. And I think the big question with Sabonis, and you guys said all the right things about one side of the court, it's the other side of the court. And when you look at really good contending teams in the NBA right now, we already talked about Time Lord in Boston. You have Lopez and Giannis in Milwaukee. You have Mobley and Jared Allen in Cleveland, Draymond Green for years in the Bay. I don't think this team can play defense well enough to make any noise. I think they need to get stronger at the exact position group we're talking about with Sabonis.
Eric, I'm just talking playoffs.
I'm talking play in. And I think they might get there and then anything can happen. I think they've made, the road from bad to good has to pass through average on the way. Yeah. And I'm impressed with where they are. I mean, no joke.
Yeah.
I love the victory beam. It's going to shine more this year than it would have shown last year there in Sacramento. And I think Mike will get the defense right. He will get, that's what he did when he got to Cleveland. Brian knows that. But that's the big thing here. Just like with Golden State, I'm not convinced they're able to fix this defense in time to make it to where they want to make it. I think they are on that edge of playing playoff, and we'll see what happens. But I think a team with a defensive rating of 114, that's a tough sell for me making any noise in the postseason.
Yeah, one other thing I'll say, you know, one of the reasons why they traded Haliburton was because they believed in Davion Mitchell, especially defensively.
Yeah.
He's, I don't know if it's a sophomore slump, but, you know, Mike's just not playing him that much. His minutes have reduced. That is something, you know, you can circle and say that's a little bit concerning because that was a guy, you know, they basically had three guards and they chose, you know, Fox and Mitchell. So, you know, you'd like to see more from him in year two, but Spears is staying on it. Goldsberry, Spears is staying on it. I like it. Committed.
I'll put the Bontemps blanket back. Let's hope they do it. It'd be great to see this weekend.
I'm not necessarily on Spears' side here. I just, you know, I literally never talk about the Kings, but there's some stuff here. And, you know, Mike Brown, to me, I would never believe he would have a top 10 offense, and I would never believe he'd have a bottom 10 defense. So they're, you know, in the inverse. So we'll see how that goes long term. But all right, gone on long enough. Thank you, Spears. Thank you, Goldsberry. Thank you to our producers, Jackson and Bruce. Thanks for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. We'll be back with the Tims later this week if they feel like it.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.